Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us on this rather windy and gray October 27th here in the great state of Maine. So I hope it's a little cheerier where you are, but you may not be listening on October 27th. You could be listening anytime. We archive our podcast just for that reason, and we do that at ace-ed.org. ACE-ED.org. That's our home website for our American Consortium for Equity in Education, of which Education Talk Radio is the voice. And we also have a magazine over there, our terrific online journal called Equity in Access. I hope you go over there, check it out, read through it. You'll love every article in there. It's a beautiful magazine. Every podcast we've ever done is over there, plus a link to our new website, which is all about social-emotional learning, and that's called SEL Today. And that's, if you want to just go there straight, it's seltoday.org, but it is linked over at ace-ed.org. And on that note, I'll stop blabbing because I want to introduce our guest, Chris Amundson. Chris is the former president and CEO of the National Association of State Boards of Education. They are very, very important and kind of hidden amongst all the organizations that make education happen. The State Boards of Education, she's the former president of the association, and she's written a book which is called 81 Questions. We'll ask her why 81. 81 Questions for Parents, Helping Your Kids Succeed in School. So, Chris, it's Larry here. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. It is great to be with you and to be with all your listeners. And it's pretty cold and windy here in Virginia, too.
There you go. I am not alone in this. Okay? That's simple,
no.
You know? And, yeah, so we'll all get through it, and then it'll be winter. So there you go. What can I tell you? You know? But speaking of winter, Chris, I do have to ask you this. Your last name is Amundson, and if I'm remembering correctly, that's a famous polar explorer. Am I right?
He is.
Any relation?
He is a famous non-relative.
Non-relative.
Norway's a small country, and we are from the same basic part. So, you know, it's possible, but we don't think so.
Chris, what I would do if I were you, let me ask that again, but this time answer, yes, of course. Of course it is, hence by my book. A book written by the relative of the great polar explorer.
Absolutely.
What do you think? They just take credit.
Absolutely, there you go.
You know, and probably you are, because from the same part of Norway, the same last name, I would say it's pretty probable that you're related somehow. You know?
Could be. I guess I'm going to go a little meta on you here, but
go ahead.
You know, I'm an explorer of a different kind. I mean, I've been spending my life trying to think about how we can get all kids the best possible education. And in a lot of ways, that is at least as hard as crossing the Antarctic.
Harder.
So maybe
I got news for you.
Right?
It's harder, and a great segue there, I got to tell you, pal. That was just great. Okay. Excellent. You should do this for a living, okay? So talk to me. And by the way, the book, I want to say the name of the book again. It's called 81 Questions for Parents, Helping Your Kids Succeed in School. And it's from Roman Publishing, which is R-O-W-M-A-N. Just Google either Roman Publishing or 81 Questions for Parents Helping Your Kids Succeed, and the book will pop right up. It's easier than going through a whole big URL here. I do have it connected up on the website as you're listening, folks, if you want to click through on that link. But just so you know, that's possible to do. So let me ask the first and most obvious question. Chris, we'll talk about your background, but why 81 questions? That's an interesting number.
Yeah, and the ultimate answer was not very interesting, but it started out that what I will say is this. From the time that I first became a public official, which is a very long time ago now, more than 30 years, parents would stop me and ask questions.
Yeah.
They are worried. Parents have always been worried, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking today, If you think about the stories that undergird our culture, from mythology, I just had to reread Antigone for a book group. And even the Bible, right? Can you see Eve saying to Adam, I'm worried about Cain and Abel. I think we have worried about our kids forever.
Okay. Funny.
And I will just say, when you are a local elected official, and particularly a school board member, a lot of that angst and agita finds its way to your door. So people would stop me on the street. They would stop me in the grocery store. And God is my witness. They once stopped me in the communion line. And they all said the same thing. I'm worried. So when I started to write a book, I thought it can't be one thing because parents are worried about all these other things.
Yeah.
So I'm in the middle of writing it, and the book publisher and I are going back and forth. And I said, I just think 100 sounds, it sounds kind of hokey. It doesn't sound like it's a real number. So we finally just settled on 81 because it sounded big. Well, then in the end, I had 83, but the book cover was already designed, so I had to go back.
The big question is, which two did you eliminate? And that should be a question
them.
At the end.
I merged
that's
them
funny.
Into a couple of other things.
That's funny. That is funny.
It was.
Okay,
it was like I called, I said, well, I'm done.
Yeah,
and he
funny.
Said, no, the book's already designed.
Yeah, 81 questions. That's okay. 81 questions is just fine. We can save the next two for the sequel, okay, which
exactly.
is 162
exactly.
questions. Okay, it's that
right.
simple. All right, we'll do that.
There you go.
You know, when you go talk about, because this is important considering who you are, go back about your background in education, okay,
yeah.
and talk about how that relates, all right, to
yeah.
what you've done through the years. And again, you were president of the state boards of education, which, if I may, as with all boards of education, is the people's voice. All right, you can see we're going through a little bit of aggravation with all that these days, okay? But that's okay.
We
always go through these slides, okay? But, and things change, et cetera, but it is the people's voice, all right? And most people don't even know about state boards. They think of their local board, okay? But the state board is incredibly important. So just talk about your background and how it all formulated.
Yeah.
I know people were coming up to you, but it goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I do tell people sometimes that I never planned my career. I was a kindergarten volunteer and things got out of hand.
Yeah.
But
I
was a teacher. When I am of the age that when you went to college and you were a woman, they sort of tried to steer you into either being a teacher or being a nurse.
Exactly.
And,
sickening.
And I didn't like blood, and so, that left education.
Yeah.
I was a teacher for a number of years, then left, worked for an education association in Washington. It was the Elementary Principals Association.
Sure, Frank's group. Yeah, sure. Lovely group.
Right, wonderful. Then had a child, the world's most nearly perfect child, and
of course,
wanted to
other
do
than mine.
Something
yep.
that let
yep.
me be a little more flexible. So I started a business doing writing and PR and researching for largely on education issues. And in that process, then was an active kindergarten volunteer when I learned that the Fairfax County School Board was going to renovate every school in the county, and it's a huge county for people who don't know.
It is.
At the time, probably 210 schools, now more like 225. They were going to renovate all the schools built in a particular year except for one. That was the school my daughter attended. I then said the always, always dangerous words, somebody ought to do something about that.
And
sure you can write the rest of that story.
Yes,
so
we can.
That led me to service on the school board. I was chairman of the school board. Then a seat opened up in the state legislature. And although even in that time, which is about 20 years ago, women were not asked typically to run, I was. The sort of party elders came to me and said, you got to run. So I spent 10 years there and then left and went back into sort of a more traditional field. I worked for an education think tank called Education Sector. Then the job at NASB, National Association of State Boards of Education, opened up. And so that was the career path. So it's been all
you know your
that.
Stuff.
Now, at the,
you know your stuff.
Yeah. At the same time, I was volunteering. I started, in addition to raising a child who, as I sometimes when I have to, will drop into a conversation, you know, she got the fat envelope from one of the Ivies. So, you know, I mean, when somebody is saying, but I also helped kids who were immigrant kids and whose parents had not gone through fifth grade get scholarships and get chosen to go to some of the finest schools in the country. So I had worked with a wide range of kids. And it was,
yes, you have.
Kept saying, you ought to write a book. And so this is finally the answer.
Well, just by being in Fairfax County education, you worked with a wide range of kids, believe me.
Oh, yeah. And when I was on the board was the time that the county really did transition from being what I would say was Ozzie and Harriet to this county where kids speak more than 100 languages.
That's right. It's a very diverse place.
It's now very diverse.
Yeah.
So it was a great – it was like getting a PhD every day.
You know? You're exactly right. It is like getting a PhD every day. But the book's timing is interesting, okay, because the last 2 years and a bit into this year, it's still continuing, though it's lessening, thank God, is the pandemic, okay?
Right.
And kind of put the book, because parents finally had the opportunity, if I may, because everybody was kind of stuck at home. All right, to see their kids' schooling. Now, I'm saying they, of course, know about their kids' schooling. The way they know about it is the kid comes home, they say, what did you learn in school today? Nothing. What did you have for homework today?
Right.
Nothing. Okay, that's the way they experience. But they finally got to see it, admittedly a changed version, but they got to see it. So here now we've got this book, okay, and they've been into catbird seed, at least they could be for the last couple of years. Talk about how the pandemic influenced all this and how it's changed
the parental look
into schools.
And we should at some point talk about the sort of helicopter parent thing too. But this was not helicopter parenting. This was like kids, you know, went home on Friday and on Monday got the word school is closed. I read there was a hilarious story about the family that had taken the class gerbil home for the weekend.
the gerbil's now 15 pounds and
Exactly. So parents are having to navigate passwords and devices, and initially schools had not, most kids didn't have their own device. Certainly schools had not given devices to every kid. Even kids who might have a computer maybe didn't have access to the internet. You know, they didn't have any kind of connectivity. I will tell you that here in Fairfax County, when I drove by my local public library months after virtual schooling had started.
Yeah.
It was about 9:30 in the morning, and the parking lot was jammed. And since the library was closed, I was perplexed until I realized those were families who had no internet. And they had piled their kids in the car and were sitting in the library parking lot. And the library knew it and would say the Wi-Fi will go on at this hour. So we did not do a good job as a country in the pandemic. And the results are coming in now, and they are bad. They are even, you know, the reading scores held a little more steady than I think people were afraid of. But partly that's because parents do know how to read. But math scores have just plummeted. And in Virginia, I'll just give you one example. On our state standards of learning tests. Now, people have different views about all of those state summative tests, but they are at least a consistent instrument, right? It's the same kids, it's the same material. And so in 2020, 82% of the kids in Virginia had passed those tests. And then the 2021 results, 54%. Mm. And that certainly echoes what I heard from parents, which was, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I'm trying to keep my own job going, and now I got to look up the friggin' life cycle of a butterfly. So there's a whole chapter, the first, really, you know, there's a big chapter in the book on what do you do when the classroom suddenly becomes your dining room table.
Yeah.
And how do you handle that? Because parents were, kids both, were tremendously frustrated. It was very hard. It was hard on everybody. So I wrote about
Agreed.
It. Hadn't planned to. But yeah. It's in there.
So let me ask you this. As the pandemic, and again, I say I hope it's waning. It seems to be statistically. It's not over, mm-hmm. but it's definitely waning, okay, which is really great news. So we're talking about 81 questions, okay?
Right.
In your mind, Chris, as the author, what questions should knowing all these statistics you just said, they may not know the statistics, but they know what's going on, okay?
Yeah.
What are the top questions that parents need to ask educators now? And I'll say educators
right.
because counselors are involved, teachers, the whole spiel.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Go ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So one I think, and if I only had one question, it would probably be, how is it that I build a love of learning in my child? What can I do to do that?
That's great.
And I tell a story in the book about a kid named Stephen, whose mother was a friend of my sister's. They both had lived in those houses that had the kind of basements that you would call a cellar. You know, they were dark and they were all of that kind of dampish. Nobody went down there. So the other friend was talking to my sister and she said, well, nobody goes down there. There's nothing down there. And then she said, oh, except for the rocket room. And my sister said, rocket room? Rocket room in their house? Well, this kid loved rockets, needed a lot of space. They carved him out a place where he could, you know, build and do all his stuff with his rockets. And he's now a PhD in rocketology, whatever the science is.
Rocketology.
I am convinced that a kid who becomes falls in love with dinosaurs or any other kind of subject, you know, you can translate that into learning Spanish words and learning math facts and all of that. So that's the first thing I think is parents have a role to play. It is ideally when we're not in pandemic, not as the teacher, but rather as the supporter, as the person who goes, man, that is I never thought of having a purple tree, but that's lovely. You know, that's the first job, I think, for parents, is just to love learning and to help kids love learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole lot that stems
from that. By the way,
that.
Before you move on, I want to say something to you. Mm-hmm. So, considering that anecdote into the audience, okay, about the rockets, okay, if you've never read it, I'm going to recommend a book to you. The book is called Rocket Boys. And it's by Homer Hickam. And it's the book from which the movie October Sky was made. The book is about, and the movie was excellent. The book's 10 times better. Okay. Rocket Boys by Homer Hickam. Trust me on this one, Chris.
I will look for
You'll
it.
Love
and
it.
We'll read it.
And I'll
so
tell you, every librarian you say Rocket Boys to, they will get a huge smile on their face and say, isn't that a wonderful
you
book?
Always know. You always know when you've asked for a wonderful book and the librarian goes,
tell your sister and their friends and you, Rocket Boys by Homer Hickam.
Rocket
Trust me.
Boys. I'm
you may,
sure the family
you may now
is
continue.
Ready.
I didn't
yeah.
want that to pass. Go ahead.
No. That's great. So that's A. I think B is parents really need to learn how to set boundaries of what they will do and what they won't. And that goes for everything, but we see it a lot in the Varsity Blues scandal, right? Where suddenly parents got so insane about getting their kids into a college that they photoshopped all of that, right? Well, now, this is not new. You may not know, I did not, that General George MacArthur's mother moved to West Point when her son was a cadet there.
You mean Douglas MacArthur. Douglas MacArthur, not George MacArthur. Douglas MacArthur.
No, well, ensured that she would like look out the window through her binoculars. And as I say in the book, if you don't think that's a little creep, at least a little creepy, this might not be the book for you.
It's creepy.
I will tell you one of the stories that I again tell in the book is when you're an elected official, you get invited to judge science fairs, right? You get to
read
the kids. That's the best thing you do. So you judge science fairs. And they're wonderful, and they're predictable. How does being in a closet with no light affect a plant, that kind of stuff? And so you can imagine my surprise when I went to a science fair and saw a model nuclear reactor that was purportedly built by a first grader. Now, I was real sure that was not his original work. And so what part of what parents need to do is learn to let go a little bit. My favorite quote.
That's a great story. That's a great story.
Yes, my favorite quote maybe. Because teachers, of course, know this is going on, but there's I quote a former Stanford dean who says, "It turns out it's very hard for all but the most seasoned of teachers to stand up to a well-heeled parent wielding a glue gun." There you have it.
There you have it in a nutshell.
It's just a kind of a perfect story. So that's the deal. So as much as possible, as early as possible, you let kids do things for themselves.
Yeah.
And you...
You'd be amazed.
There's a whole long question in the book, one interview with a wonderful kindergarten teacher who says, let's just remember that when kids come to, she said, our whole first month of kindergarten is about packets and pouches. She said, they don't know that ketchup comes in a packet. And they don't know how to put a straw in a pouch of a juice box. She said, we spend all this time just getting them to do those basic things. And then she does, and I do not want to spoil it, but I will say this. When you read her description of where kindergartners' shoelaces go in the course of a day, you will keep your kid in Velcro till they're 21. She says, it's not that they can't learn to tie shoes. They haven't learned to tie shoes. Put them in Velcro. Let them do it themselves. So I think that's the second big thing is, really, I promise you that nobody's kid ever didn't get into Princeton because they did a crappy diorama in the third grade.
Well, they couldn't tie their shoes. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the truth.
Let it do it.
Let them go. Let them do it themselves. Let them learn. Let them fail, if I may. Okay?
Yeah,
and
right.
That brings about expertise. It really does. We learn by failure. We learn by trying, et cetera, et cetera. And there is that helicopter parenting aspect, which I'm sure got worse during the pandemic.
It just gets worse and worse. Yeah. And
hey, Chris, I want to ask you something. This is an interesting question.
Oh, okay.
Chris,
go ahead.
Chris, I just have to ask you this. We sometimes forget and I'm just to state the obvious, that teachers are parents too. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, and they have to, the teachers put up with the parents of their kids. Okay. Most of the time it works out great. I put up with is kind of
right.
a strong term. Okay. But just as over the course of time, as you've talked to so many teachers over the years, how are they on working with their own kids and dealing with teachers at their kids' schools?
It's a really good question, and more of them are good on it than not, but there are some who are awful. You know, we had one here who just, and I can't go into it too much except to say that he was actually a principal, and he was trying to pull strings, change admissions requirements,
really?
Get his kid. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, as I say, more teachers are good on that issue than not, but they're human. You know, it's a slice of the population, and some of them are better than others. So that's the deal. Now, I will say this, and I was just on the phone this week with a young mom who I have known, she's a friend of my daughter's, so I've known her really since she was 5 years old. And she now has a kid who is in fourth grade and really struggling. That's the other thing I think we need to say about the pandemic, and when you say it's not over, why it's not over is they're coming back and they've forgotten how to get along with each other.
That's
all
right.
The social and emotional skills they
right.
you know, if they learned, you know, the math they learned was maybe not what it should be. One of the things that's in the book, and then I will continue with this story of the young mom, but one of the things that's in the book is a group called Seek Common Ground did a series of things for parents. And these are largely, we originally thought these would be aimed at parents of kids of color who were in schools where teachers just didn't have very high expectations for them. And, you know, oh, well, we're in the third grade and we're still not adding and subtracting three-digit numbers. Don't worry about that. That'll be fine. And so what they did was to work with some curriculum experts and to say, if your kid only learns 5 math and 5 language arts things in second grade, these are the big 5. And in third, so we did it for grades K through high school, so that parents would know if their kids were on target. Well, during the pandemic, I said, look at this. If your kid doesn't learn everything, they aren't going to learn everything. But at least in third grade, make sure, and there are lots of resources online, make sure your kid can add and subtract 3-digit numbers.
Yep.
That's really key. They're going to need that going into fourth grade. So they didn't all read my book, I'm sad to say.
Ha.
And some of them showed up, and they just, you know, so the kids are lost, and they're frustrated, and the teachers are frustrated. And this happened to be a teacher who I think hasn't yet figured out that she can't teach fourth grade like she taught it before the pandemic. She's going to have to make some changes, and that'll get worked out, but it's not worked out right now. So this little girl is crying every night, and it's a mess. And, you know, so the mom and I talked, and so I guess the other thing that I would say is there are just inevitably going to be bumps in the road between parents and schools.
Sure.
And there are ways that parents can and should. You should not let your kid cry every night for a whole year. That is not okay. And you have to let the school know. You have to get something, you know, done about
that's
it. Right. But there are
right.
ways to do it. And so I lay out a whole strategy for how you can, you know, go talk to a teacher if you're having a problem. Go talk to the principal if the teacher doesn't seem to be interested in working with you. And so on.
But
I think it's not a sign that it doesn't mean the teacher is a bad person or even a bad teacher. Doesn't mean your kid is dumb. But
that's right.
There are just
right.
going to be bumps in the road, and you got to anticipate them and figure it out and then develop a strategy for what you do.
And, you know, I'll segue into another section I wanted to ask you about. All right? And you wrote that there are in fact, school secrets
yes.
that parents need to know. In other words, there's stuff going on that you can work your way through if you know about it, the old
yes.
story. Give an example of that so people can understand that, because you've been on the inside and the outside of all this. Like
right.
a good secret
well,
you can learn that helps you navigate exactly what your friend is going through.
Right, exactly. Well, I will get at the end. We'll talk about band, and because band is the biggest school secret of all. If you want your kid to hang out with smart kids, but we'll talk about that at the end.
Well, that's interesting. I hope we can. But what you've said
yeah.
right there is important. Right there. And go ahead. And by the way, our good friend over at NAESP, Earl Franks, who runs that organization now, was a band leader, trumpet player. There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, let me talk about band, because it may be the biggest untold secret.
We got about 5 or 6 minutes
so,
left, so go ahead. So I
okay.
just want to make sure
right.
we get everything.
Yeah,
in.
I wondered what our time was. So here's
yeah.
the deal. The band in every high school, just about, is the biggest class, right? So it enrolls a lot of smart kids. So it drives the schedule. So when you build a schedule, as you know, you do not schedule AP calculus opposite Latin 4 at the same time, because it's the same kids.
Same kids.
So building a schedule is as much art as science. And the reality is you plunk band down first, because that's all your leaders, that's your smart kids in
huh.
all 4 grades. And what you do not want, particularly if you have a parent who is kind of what I would describe as one of those kids who's kind of a leaner and who's going to follow whatever the peer group is. Well, the peer group you want your kid with is the peer group of kids who say, well, we can't go out tonight. There's a chemistry test tomorrow, for Pete's sake. That's who you want your kid with, right? So you put.
I would say so.
Because not only will they be in the band together, but they will be in English together. They will be in math together. They will kind of move together in a little grouping, and you will worry less about it. And the other thing is, and particularly in those early days of high school when everybody is. You know, I don't know who to go to the football game with, and I don't know who to say. Well, if you go to the band, go with the band kids, you know exactly what you're going to wear, which is your band uniform, and you know exactly where you are going to sit, which is on the 40-yard line. And so it gives you a built-in peer group. It gives you peer pressure of kids who are serious and focused. And then there's
nice
a lot of really solid brain research
nice
about all
say.
Of the wonderful things that music does to you. So I always say to band
music
directors,
teaches you math.
Your
speaking
ears.
Of math, speaking of math problems, music teaches you math.
Yep.
But we'll get into that some
yep.
other time. Yep.
Yes. So anyway, so that's a big secret. Another big secret I would say is never get mad. And if you threaten to sue, the very first thing that I was told as a school board member on the day one of my first day of orientation was this. If you never get sued, you probably aren't doing your job. So so when a parent would come to me and say, I'm going to sue you, I'd go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. School districts all have lawyers, and frankly, they have pretty solid laws that protect them as long as they're not doing anything real dumb. But if you are behaving in a school board way, in a way that is exercising your duties so that you, in fact, remove the kid who brought, I don't know, here's one that I had to face. A kid brought liquor on a band trip and got suspended for 2 days, and the parents were going to sue over it. Well, you know, the rules were the rules, and the kid brought liquor on the band trip, and we suspended him, and that was it. And I wouldn't worry about it in the least little bit. So I'd say lawsuits are not a very good way generally. Sometimes they are, sometimes they can be, and sometimes you have to be. But so that would be two. One, for your kid, get them in with the kids who are serious, who really you know, are focused on the future, and then one for yourself, which is when you are working through the inevitable problem, A, you're not a bad parent, B, don't lose your temper.
Great advice, my friend. Great advice. And I'll tell you, we've got to go, but there's plenty more from Chris Amundson. This is that great, Chris. It's great to have you here. 81 questions for parents helping your kids succeed in school. This is the name of the book. Chris, thanks a million. Good luck with everything. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, thanks so much. This was fun. It was great to talk to you. And
bye, Chris. Thank you. Okay, you take care. Be good. Stay safe.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to be good, Chris, but you normally are pretty good, I got to tell you. Anyway, thank you. Chris Amundson, again, is the former executive director of the National Association of State Boards of Education. Long history in education, knows what she's talking about. And the book is from Roman Publishing, R-O-W-M-A-N, and it's called 81 Questions for Parents, Helping Your Kids Succeed in School. She knows the ropes. You want your kids to succeed? Make it a Christmas gift. It's a good one. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. And if you want to, once you're over there, you can link to seltoday.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. And by the way, a big thank you to my friend Stacy Finkel, who helped me put this all together today. Thanks a million.